So let's resume. The second speaker of today, and also was agreed to give, in fact, a series of two talks. He will also speak tomorrow morning. Javier Cabré from Barcelona, and really well-known specialist on nonlinear elliptic parabolic equations, qualitative properties, very subtle analysis of these problems. So thank you very much, Javier, for being part of this inauguration of this program.
Okay, Jean-Michel, it's a pleasure, in fact, to speak here and to speak twice. I like that. and also to be in Paris with the ERC, invited by the ERC for 2 months. So tomorrow I will speak rather about more like front propagation for fractional diffusions. Today, it's rather about isoperimetric inequalities, but the motivation, and I'm going to start with that because I like that, comes from reaction diffusion also. So these isoperimetric inequalities are quite new, and we arrived to them thanks to a reaction diffusion equation. So I may have to go a little fast because there are quite a good number of things. So please interrupt me at any point when you don't, if something is not totally clear. I have to go a little fast, okay? So the reaction diffusion question is an open problem which still remains open and I find very interesting, and it is mainly thanks to Jaime Brezis, who insisted in this question since I was already still postdoc in Paris, so the mid-90s, okay? And the question comes from modeling combustion, the Gelfand problem. You know, the Gelfand problem is this equation minus Laplacian U equals a constant times the exponential of U, okay? For this equation, you can consider solutions, or you can restrict yourself to stable solutions, and they exist, in fact, for some parameters in front of the exponential, in every domain, if the parameter is not too large, they exist, these stable solutions. If you don't know what is stable solution, think of as little smaller class which are local minimizers of the energy. Solutions which are stable among small perturbations, or say that are local minimizers of the energy. And for this equation, it is known that all these solutions that in principle could be weak solutions, L1, distribution solutions, up to dimension 9, they are regular. Up to dimension 9 included, they are always regular, these stable solutions for this nonlinearity, the exponential, and for power nonlinearities also. And in dimension 10, there are examples. The simplest one is the radial one, which is the logarithm. Is a solution of the Gelfand equation, and it is not stable anymore. Okay. It's still stable, and even a local minimizer, but it is singular. Okay, so this is in the spirit of the classical questions on the calculus of variations. Regularity holds when regularity holds, and then. For instance, in minimal surface theory, the same happens. Minimizers are regular up to a certain dimension. Minimal surfaces are when you have a hypersurface in Rn and n is less or equal than 7. And in R8, you can find already a minimal surface which is minimizing, and it is not regular, it is singular. But a minimal surface singular means that it's like it has a conic singularity. For reaction diffusion equations means that the solution blows up at some point. So the open question, and that's what Haim insisted very much, is try to prove the same, not only for the exponential nonlinearity or for the powers, but for any nonlinearity. Or say, think of the worst explosive nonlinearity, say that the nonlinearity is positive, increasing, and convex, for instance. But I think that the problem also, you can think it any nonlinearity, it should be true. In the radial case, it's true, and I proved that some years ago. Okay, in the radial case, it's true. Thinking of general nonlinearity is interesting, I think, because the exponential, for instance, is a very simplified model. Why should it be exactly this nonlinearity? And also because in some problems, for instance, in fluids, things like this, you find that potentials satisfy a semilinear equation, but you don't know what the nonlinearity is. You have to understand a semilinear equation, Laplacian u equals f of u, minus Laplacian u equals f of u, as saying, you can understand it as saying, the Laplacian is constant on the level sets of u. And when I say this, if you have a function whose Laplacian is constant on its, on each level set of this, of the function, this means that the function satisfies the semilinear equation, but you don't know what f is, okay? And this happens, for instance, in ideal fluids in the plane, ideal fluids, incompressible ideal fluids, when you have a potential which is u, okay, and vorticity is constant is along streamlines, okay?
Sorry, but in these cases, there is no obvious argument to say why the dependence should be convex.
No. And what I also don't know, you can read a paper by Nicolai Nadirashvili, very recent paper in archive, you'll find it, where he studies in ideal and compressible fluids in the plane and through analyzing semilinear reaction diffusion equation for general F. Okay, precisely the point is to make it for general F. And in Barcelona, so a month ago, Nicolai presented that, and I asked him, related to your question, not about convexity of F, but I asked...
Positivity?
No, stability of U. What is in fluids, I also had asked Luis Caffarelli, but what would be nice to know if a stability in our elliptic sense of the solution has something to do with stability, some kind of stability for the fluid. Okay, that's not known. Well, we didn't. I didn't think too much about it, but it's not clear. Nicolai also was not clear to him. Okay. So now I can go much faster. This is the equation. Think of the Dirichlet boundary, zero Dirichlet boundary conditions, and think of u positive solutions, okay? And if you have these conditions, there will always be stable solutions, at least if you put a parameter in front, okay? These are the models I was referring to. And... that's the open problem, okay? Still open problem. By the way, it is known in the radial case, as I told you. This is Grégoire Nedev, a student of Chaim Brezis, who proved it up to in dimension 2 and 3. And in dimension 4, this can be removed now by Salvador Villegas, somebody using my proof, but improving it a little. Omega convex is not needed anymore, I think, yes. This is 2010, okay? So in dimensions 5 to 9, still open. And what I studied with, all this is joint work with my two students in Barcelona who are finishing the PhD in the spring, Javier Rosoton and Joaquim Serra, okay? And I started working on this reaction diffusion question with Javier Rosoton. And I suggested to him to study this. Instead of the radial case, the doubly radial case, say, we have a domain who is invariant under revolution of some variables and revolution of the remaining variables, okay? Call it double revolution. So you see you have Rn as Rm, Rk. This is the first radial variable. This is the second radial variable. The PDE, you can write it now in the plane. You can write it in the plane. It's a PDE, very nice PDE, very not to study, very, very few studies about this. Ours is one of the first, eh? perhaps the first. Well, not the first, but I had another one previously, but okay. You see, it's very nice, I think. It's in the plane, so you have an advantage. You only have two variables, but it is not radially... It is not translation invariant as this. So moving plane, things like this are going to be more delicate here. Sometimes you won't be able to do it. The energy should be now next thing. The energy is here. Now you write it in the plane with the two variables, and you see you have the same Lagrangian, but now there is a weight or density, and you should think of it as a new measure. Sm minus 1 ds, tk minus 1 dt. Okay? So this is the new thing, a weight or a density in the reference measure, say. And this is the PD, the same PD as this one. Okay? I have to go a little fast, but if something is not clear, just interrupt me. Okay? And this is what we could prove with Javier Ross, Rosoton, two last names, okay? If the domain is convex, we could prove the regularity of stable solutions up to dimension 7. And 8 and 9 remains open. And in dimension 8 and higher, we can prove some LP estimates, which is not the optimal LP from what the radial case tells you. The radial case, we proved regularity up to dimension 9, and we proved also an LP estimate in dimension 10 and higher with the P optimal one from the examples that we know in the Gelfand problem and the power nonlinearities. But this is not the optimal, but at least it's something, okay? And it was this part here where we needed a new Sobolev inequality. In the plane, if you want, you can take we needed Q equals 2, because the energy has Q equals 2, but always with this reference measure, sigma and tau are powers of S and T. In the proof, we have to make some powers of S, change variables, make a power of S, make a power of T, and then we call that sigma and tau, but it looks the same. It's like the same type of reference measure, sigma A, tau B, d sigma d tau. And A and B are some exponents that depend on the dimension, on the dimension n, m, and k. And they are not integers in general, A and B. And there is the same reference measure on the right and on the left. And what we wanted to know is what is the best Sobolev exponent in this work. That was enough for us. And, if you can know what is the best constant, that would be nice. And so, and that's what we, at the end, that's what I will tell you today. Okay? Before that, let me tell you, this is the answer. We always had A and B greater than minus 1. Think of A and B positive. Most of the time, A and B are positive. And the best exponent when Q is less than D, okay, D is going to be 2 plus A plus B. Suppose that Q, for instance, Q is 2. If Q is 2 and A and B are positive, you have this. Then the Q star is going to be like the Sobolev, classical Sobolev exponent, dimension times Q over dimension minus Q. But instead of n, and in the we are in dimension 2, instead of 2Q, 2 minus Q, is dQ, d minus Q. So there is this new dimension here. And now let me tell you that this is not so strange. In fact, let me tell you, if A and B are positive integers, this inequality, we all know it. There is nothing to prove. If A and B are positive integers, this is the Jacobian in RA plus 1. And this is the Jacobian in RB plus 1. So this is just the classical Sobolev inequality for doubly radially symmetric functions in R A plus 1 cross R B plus 1. Okay, so I'm in dimension A plus B plus 2, which is this thing here. So all we needed to do is to prove the same thing, prove the same thing, but we need it for this reaction diffusion question, we need it A and B non-integers. non-integers, because in fact they are things like this. I mean, it's never most of the time they are not integers. Then you can think of using the usual techniques to prove Shabalov inequalities, which are mainly two, the Gagliardo-Nirenberg proof that you find in the book of Rezis and Evans, and the, also the other one that uses the Ries transform, write the function u as a Ries transform of the gradient. And with the weights, none of them gives the proofs give something, but the exponents change. Like in Riemannian geometry, say perimeter. The exponents change. And here we need exactly the same exponent, simply because this is Lebesgue measure, and this is Lebesgue measure in the case A and B are integers, in the case when A and B are integers, okay? Okay, so what we thought is, the Shabalov, we don't know how to prove it. Let's try first to prove an isoperimetric inequality. From isoperimetric inequalities, you can always deduce a Shabalov inequality, okay? Isoperimetric inequality is equivalent to something like this with Q equals 1. You prove it with Q equals 1, then by Holder, you can prove it with any Q, okay? Okay, so this is the isoperimetric problem with a density. Given you a density means a positive function, say a positive function W. In our case, the density is what I call a monomial. The first variable to a power, the second variable to a power. Okay, a monomial. This is the weighted volume. This is the weighted perimeter. Always the same, with the same weight or density. The isoperimetric problem is given a weighted volume, find sets with minimal perimeter, weighted perimeter. Okay. That I already said. With Q equals 2, this is like the Dirichlet form associated to this equation, also a reaction, a diffusion operator with a drift. And here you see the log of W. Okay, this is just something to keep in mind. So what do you do to analyze this isoperimetric problem? The first thing you have to do is to do the first variation. And that's very simple. The first variation means, if you have a minimizer, you make the Euler-Lagrange equation, there is a Lagrange multiplier coming from this, so you will find that minimizers have some quantity constant. And the quantity, you find it very easily, just making the first variation, and it is what we call generalized mean curvature, or weighted mean curvature. And it is this guy, the classical Euclidean mean curvature, plus a constant, 1 over n, and the normal derivative to the minimizer, to the set, of the log of W. Okay? That's very simple. And this we call generalized mean curvature, and that should be constant in a solution of the problem. And now you think, okay, let me think about balls. Okay, when A and B are integers, we know all the answers, solutions. The inequality is just the classical isoperimetric or the classical Shabalov. Minimizers are balls, of course. So you expect that when A and B are not integers, the same should be true, of course, right? Balls. So let me think when balls are stationary. Balls are, if you have a ball, Euclidean mean curvature is constant, this should also be constant. Is it for a ball? Well, if the weight is radially symmetric, for sure, because this is a ball, the weight is radial, this normal derivative is going to be constant. Great. But my weight is not radial. X1 to a power, X2 to a power has cosinus and sinus of the angles. So, but it's fine, because if W is a density or a weight which is homogeneous, like mine, of degree A plus B, Then, you know, by Euler, I think it's called Euler formula, the gradient of W cross, times the position vector X is the degree of homogeneity times W. Right? X times the gradient of W at X equals A plus B times W. So, if it's a ball, that's a normal derivative. It's like x times the gradient, modulo of the radius of the ball, divided by W. That's exactly a constant, the degree of homogeneity. So, and now, let me tell you, this is the only reason. At the end, we will find that balls are the isoperimetric sets, of course, when A and B are not integers. We'll find that. We'll prove that. It's rather funny, right, that minimizers are balls when the weight, the density, is not radial. And you will see then many examples where balls are not isoperimetric sets. But in this case, the density is not invariant under rotations because there are the cosinus and the sinus. Instead, minimizers are still the balls. And this is quite surprising, in fact, for me. And the only reason still at this time that I have is this one. I mean, the only reason besides a proof, the only way to understand it is that, well, to understand, to give a reason, fast reason, is that at least they are stationary, okay, thanks to this computation. Okay, for instance, now I'll go a little fast. This is long story, long time ago. The Gaussian density is radially symmetric. Minimizers are not ball centered at the origin. In fact, they're hyperplanes. With the other sign, the log convex, I mean the exponential of x squared, yes, here it's fine. Balls the only isoperimetric sets are ball centered at the origin. Power densities, they are radially symmetric. If the power is negative enough, yes, minimizers are ball centered at the origin, the exterior. Here are the exterior. If alpha is between minus 2 and 0, there are no minimizers, surprise. And even more surprise, if alpha is positive, minimizers are balls in the plane, even. Are circles, but passing through the origin, not centered at the origin. And the density is radially symmetric. So a big, big ball centered at the origin are stationary, but are not minimizers. So big surprise, say breaking of symmetry for minimizers, okay? And all this is very recent. All this is very recent. And it's in the plane. Most of this is open in higher dimensions, okay? And all this has been pushed very much by Frank Morgan, who has even a blog that is called like this, log convex conjecture, because here the big conjecture, and there are very few results, the conjecture is very simple, very nice, it's this one. In the lines of the result from the guys from Granada and also Bale and Morgan, this is a log convex radial density, log convex. So I'll tell you why now, log convex. So the conjecture says, suppose that the density is radially symmetric and log convex. Then prove that the isoperimetric sets are balls centered at the origin. And this is open, and there are only two results, one by Figali and Maggi, that for small volumes, weighted volume, for small weighted volume, yes. For very small weighted volume, yes, isoperimetric weighted sets are ball centered at the origin. And the other one is by Kolosnikov, I think his name, Kolosnikov, Russian guy, Moscow, I think, for very large volumes. This is also true for very large volumes. Yes. Why log convex? This comes from the second variation of energy. Now, we know the first variation of energy, and in some case, in the radial case, we know that balls centered at the origin are isoperimetric. Are stationary. Satisfy the first variation. What is the next thing you do? And for this, the good thing is that you don't need to have great ideas. To do the first variation and the second variation, you just need to compute. Radial density, ball center at the origin are stationary. Now you make the second variation and you analyze when ball center at the origin are stable or not. And that's very simple, and you find that ball center at the origin are stable for radial densities if and only if the weight is log convex, okay? So what is known is that under this assumption, balls centered at the origin are stationary and stable, okay? And what they want to prove and what is natural to conjecture is that, in fact, they are minimizers, at least prove that they are minimizers, and then try to prove that they are the only minimizers. But the conjecture is open already to prove that they are minimizers, okay? Okay, so there is a block that. And my problem, I come back to my problem. My problem, this was set, the conjecture was set in all RN. My problem is rather in a quarter plane. Think of the R2 with the power nonlinearities. In fact, the variables S and T, which are radial coordinates, are positive. So it's better to think that you are in a quarter plane. Quarter plane is a cone, okay? And the perimeter here, you are not going to count it. You count the perimeter here, but not here, because this corresponds to S equals zero. In the ST plane, S equals zero has codimension, very large codimension, so there is no... And besides, the weight vanishes there, so S to the A vanishes. So for this weight, you can count the perimeter or not here, but it gives you the same. So, it's like you have a cone that is like a cookie, right? You have some ice cream, and then you weight the perimeter, is the surface perimeter of the ice cream, not the cookie, just the ice cream. And the volume is the volume, weighted volume, okay? And the isoperimetric problem is going to be the same for weighted volume equals 10, which is the shape that has less weighted perimeter. There are also results about breaking of symmetry where densities are radial and ball center at the origin are not minimizers. So the problem is very delicate, even for very simple weights, radial weights, okay? And this is the result that we can prove. Yeah, this is the main result we can prove with Javier and Joaquim. And it's in archive, okay? Everything is in archive. Also the reaction diffusion motivating problem. Take a convex, this is very important, convex open cone of Rn, and take a density which is homogeneous of degree alpha greater or equal than zero. And this is the key condition, we'll talk about it later. When you make the density homogeneous of degree one, when you make it homogeneous of degree one with this power, then in the cone it should be concave. It should be concave. This is an assumption. This is an hypothesis which is satisfied by the monomial weights, I will say later. Then it's very easy to state balls center at the origin. Any ball center at the origin, or it's enough by homogeneity to take the unit ball center at the origin, intersected with the cone, the black thing here, minimizes weighted perimeter among functions with same weighted volume. So the ball center at the origin are solution of the isoperimetric problem, okay? So this is an isoperimetric inequality with best constant. This holds for every omega, convex or not convex, doesn't matter, the cone is convex, and this is a constant, and it's the optimal constant because equality is achieved for ball center at the origin, okay? So when there is no weight, this was proved using the Brun-Minkowski inequality by Pierre Lyons and Filomena Pacella already more than 20 years ago, okay? Is not radial, but balls minimize, okay? There are many, many, there is a transparency later, okay. Okay. This condition is the key point. For monomials, it's always satisfied. If you take a monomial x1, a1, x2, a2, x times x3 to the power a3, xn to the power an, it's of degree a1 plus a2 plus an. If you make it, if you make the a1 plus an root of this, this is a concave function on the first octant or quadrant or octant. Okay, that's very simple. So once, okay, we wrote the first version of the paper, which is a comprehensive note. We wrote it like this. And then I sent it to several people. I sent it to Cédric Villani, answered sometime after, saying, okay, this condition may be related to some, from some computations I made, like this. Some of them are in his book. He said in my book, Optimal Transport, All the New. You know that with an optimal transport, you can prove the isoperimetric inequality. This, he said, could be related to some kind of curvature, Ricci curvature assumption. Okay? When Lebesgue measure is replaced with this new reference measure, W of x dx. When you have a new reference measure, you can write like a Ricci tensor, which is different than the Euclidean Ricci tensor or the Riemannian Ricci tensor. Okay? And he was right, in fact. He was totally right. Took us some days to realize, but he was right. This tensor has a name. It's a Bacri. It's a French tensor, right? It's a Bacri-Emery Ricci tensor. And I'll tell you how you find it. It's very natural to find it. And this is exactly, this is exactly what Cédric said, and he was right. This is equivalent to the non-negativeness of the Bacri-Emery Ricci tensor associated to the reference measure W, which is the density, and a certain dimension that is the dimension of your space plus the dimension of the degree of homogeneity of the weight. That is not surprising because it's a plus b plus 1 plus 1, a plus b plus 2 in our first example, okay? What is this guy? Well, the formula, the definition, say, if you want, is this one here, but I'll tell you where it comes from. This is Ricci in Euclidean space, which is zero. You could make this the same thing in a Riemannian manifold, and here you would have the Ricci curvature of the manifold. But now it's a manifold with a reference measure, okay? And it comes naturally when you have equations with drifts. Remember, this is like an equation with drift. Laplacian in dimension to Laplacian plus grad log W, which appears here, log W, grad U. How you find this tensor? How did they find it? Well, you have now a weighted volume. Instead of volume, Riemannian volume, you have a Riemannian weighted volume. Then you try to prove the simplest, basic comparison principles in Riemannian geometry, like the Bishop comparison, volume comparison, when you try to compare volume of your manifold with the volume of a space manifold, a space form. So the manifolds with constant curvature. You make the computation, and that's where it appears, the Ricci, for instance, the Ricci tensor that tells you if that is positive or negative, you will have comparison with the constant curvature spaces. Here you do the same, and you find the usual term, plus some terms that come from the reference measure, which are these ones. Okay, and that's it. And you can... And D is also, well, Villani also calls this Bacri-Emery Ricci tensor. He also calls them being positive. He calls it in his book, curvature dimension condition. It's very nice because it emphasizes the role of this dimension, which is D, that in general could be even a non-integer thing. In our case, it's not integer. But you have to think that... in the case always of exponents which are integers, and then d becomes an integer, and it's that you are in lower dimensions, but you are in R2, but you can embed your problem in Rd. And d is a dimension that has sense with respect to the reference measure, okay? But all this, d is going to be non-integer. Okay, this is a comment about the crucial condition is this one, okay? But look, there are many, many, many examples of homogeneous weights with this happening. And for those, surprisingly, balls minimize. So in particular, in the weighted case, we are going to give a new proof of the Lyons-Pacella result, completely different, using what I call the Alexandrov-Bakelman-Pucci method. I want to arrive to the proof. That's the main point. Let me skip some things. All this also works for what we call an isotropic perimeter, which means that besides density, different directions, like in crystals, say, different directions weight differently in the perimeter. And then you have this function, okay? And instead of balls, now the candidates are the crystal shape or wall shape associated to H, which is called the wall shape, and it's given by a formula, very simple formula, and the same, our result also holds in this case, and minimizers are wolf shapes, okay? And again, we give a new proof of the wolf theorem, unweighted wolf theorem, which is classical, was conjectured by Wolf more than 100 years ago, proved by Gene Taylor this year. Also using Brown-Minkowski, like Lyons-Pacella, we provide a new proof. This was pointed out a long time ago when I was in Paris. Okay, this proof of the isoperimetric inequality ABP, I found it when I was in Paris. Okay, so Paris was the illuminating thing. I found it in the classical isoperimetric inequality, so for the unweighted case, I wrote it. And for a long time, we couldn't make it work in other situations. We tried Riemannian manifolds, things like this. We couldn't make it work to give you a sharp constant, okay? And suddenly now, because of this reaction diffusion problem and these monomial densities, with Xavier and Joaquin, we realized that my proof from 1998, something like that, also works with the weights, okay? When I found it in 1998, I told people, and then Robert McCann was the person who told me it also works for the anisotropic case, okay? Unweighted anisotropic case, which is very nice. Okay, nothing new. The theorem and the examples. The examples, okay? The monomials. Let me say that then we found that a paper from 1988 by Sandro Salza and Maderna already proved the isoperimetric, that balls are minimizers, center at the origin are minimizers, in the case of the half space in dimension 2 and the half space and this monomial. It's not our monomial, it's a simpler. And in dimension 2, they could prove that balls center at the origin are minimizers because you expect the minimizer to be a graph. It's an OD. Then since the problem is you're in R2, this function is a function of one variable, it's going to satisfy an ODE. You can analyze the ODE, and that's what they did. Some more work by Frederick Brock and Chiacchion Mercado. They can also add this and prove for monomial weights the same result, even with this Gaussian. Proof is independent of us, completely different proof. Like by induction, say, by induction, by like an inductive argument. Remember, our result is more general in the sense that we can cover also many other homogeneous densities. Let me skip this. for instance, homogeneous densities, there are many. This is a nice one. You give me a convex cone, I take the distance to the boundary of the cone, to a power. It's a concave. It's a homogeneous. You give me a convex cone, you take the distance to the boundary, to a power. This is homogeneous of degree alpha. And if you make it homogeneous of degree one, the distance is a concave function. Okay, anyway. So let me describe the proof in the classical unweighted case and then in the weighted case. Very fast, remember, the classical proof of the isoperimetric inequality uses Steiner symmetrization. That's a classical proof. Delicate already enough, but you make a proof out of it. Then in order of chronology, there is the Gromov, even the Gnote. Some people told me that, Milman told me that Gnote already perhaps knew. Anyway, Gromov uses what is called the Gnote map. What is this? I don't remember, no? Maybe the year? Yeah, 86, okay, 1986. To give a very simple map, Gromov constructs to prove isoperimetric inequalities, there is symmetrization. If not, all the other proofs go in the same lines. You construct a map that deforms your domain into a ball, that maps your domain to a ball. And then you have some information on the map, and you try to prove that while volume change in some way, perimeter change, but got bigger in the domain than what volume increase. Or perhaps volume is the same as the ball, and perimeter is larger, okay? So there are several of these maps. The Gnote map used by Gromov, which is very simple. You can teach to an undergraduate student because it's explicit. The Gnote map by integration on slices. It reminds a little of the proof of Gagliardo-Nirenberg proof of the Sobolev inequality. Then there is the Trudinger map from 1994 that uses the Monge-Ampère equation solved for a characteristic function of your domain in a very large ball. You send R go to infinity. Then there is my map that I would call the Neumann map, because you will see that I use a Neumann problem. And then some years later, there is the Cordero-Rauskin and Nazaré-Villani proof, who uses simply the Brenier map from optimal transport. Okay. Okay, so let me describe you my proof, which is the Neumann map, and it's very simple. Solve this, and I think is that you solve a very simple linear problem. The Laplacian equal as a constant, and the Neumann normal derivative of the solution equals a constant, say 1, in the domain. Okay, I have a domain and I want to prove that is worse than balls for perimeter. Okay. So solve this. This constant is adjusted so that the divergence, so that there is a solution. Unique solution up to an additive constant. The solution is the black guy. Think that the normal derivative is 1. I'm plotting the graph of the solution. It arrives at the boundary with 45 degrees because the normal derivative is 1. Now, this is the Alexandrov-Bakelman-Pucci method. You are going to take planes, the blue plane here, very low, very far at minus infinity, say, with slope less than 1, think that this blue guy has slope less than 45 degrees, strictly less. And then you bring this plane up, like this, in a parallel way, you bring it up until it touches for first time the graph of U. It cannot touch on the boundary. It cannot touch on the boundary because... since the slope is smaller, it would go like that. So it has to touch in the interior, and this is the crucial point. It has to touch in the interior. And at the point where it touches, this is the slope of modulus less than 1. It touches at a point, maybe at 2, but at least at 1, x. at this point x, the gradient of u at the point x is p, and the Hessian of u at the point x is going to be non-negative because u is above a plane at this point. And therefore, we have proof, and this is the crucial statement, that the unit ball of slopes centered at the origin is contained in the gradient image of omega. Even more, it's contained in the gradient image of this set is the contact set. It's the point, the set of points where you have contact. And in particular, it's smaller than the set of points where there is a plane by below. Or maybe, well, okay, yeah. This is like, this is my map, the map grad of u, the gradient map for this Neumann problem, is going to send omega, or a subset of omega, into something which is larger than the unit map, than the unit ball, okay? And now from here you take measure of this and measure of this, the measure of this is less than the measure of this, and you get that. Oh, by the way, note, if omega is the unit ball, all what we do from now on has to be equalities. If not, we will not find the sharp isoperimetric inequality. If omega is the unit ball, the solution of the Neumann problem is a parabola, because its Hessian is its Laplacian is constant, and the normal derivative on the boundary is one. This is the solution. The gradient map is the identity. This is an identity, and now we have to be careful to make everything equalities in this case. So the argument goes like this. We have proven this with the Legendre transform. That was only the argument touching by below, is that just the Legendre transform. Take measures, use the area formula. For every p, there is at least one x, so you'll have an inequality. There is at least one x such that you have this. This is the change of variables. The Jacobian is the Jacobian of the gradient is the determinant Hessian, which in the contact set is positive. You don't have to put the absolute value. This is the area formula. The determinant Hessian is the product of the eigenvalues of the Hessian. They are all non-negative. Geometric, in isoperimetric inequalities, you will always use at some point the geometric arithmetic mean that I know. Geometric arithmetic mean inequality. And this is the sum of the eigenvalues of the Hessian. It's a Laplacian. This was identity for the radial case. This is an identity, also very easy. This is the crucial point. This is an identity in the radial case because all the eigenvalues are 1. 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. So, identity. And now I come to the Laplacian. This is the Laplacian. But the Laplacian is constant, so that's great. And okay, and this is an inequality that is equality for balls, so it's isoperimetric inequality. And just to finish, let me tell you that first we discovered that this worked for the monomials. This is a first paper that I wrote only with Xavier Rosoton. Everything is in archive. It was in the monomial case, okay? This is the Sobolev inequality. The proof goes like this. Now, instead of solving the Laplacian, you solve what you expect. The operator with a drift, say, with this density here. This is a divergence form. You see, the argument uses the divergence form and the non-divergence form of the operator. Here, I use the divergence form to apply the Fredholm alternative, or say the divergence theorem, to find the constant. Divergent form. For this constant, there is a solution. And this already involves weighted volume and weighted perimeter. And look, develop this now. Make it in non-divergence form, if you want, because we will lose it later. This is, let me pass this here, dividing there. This is then Laplacian of u plus, I put the divergence here, a1... x1 to the a1 minus 1 ux1 plus A2 X2 to the A2 minus 1 UX2. Okay? And in the radial case, this is the solution of this problem. The normal derivative is constant, and this is also constant. I mean, this function is also a solution of this equation. Okay? That's a key point. And then the proof goes the same, uses the Legendre transform to prove that slopes of modulus less than 1 is contained here. Now you take weighted volumes of this guy, weighted volume of the ball. You use the, this is the weighted volume of this set, which is the same as the ball. This is the weighted volume of the ball. Now you use the area formula and as before. And now you have this density that becomes grad u at the point x at the power to the power a. This means ux1 to the a1 times ux2 to the a2, uxn to the an. All these uxns are going to be positive because I'm taking the first quadrant of the first quadrant. And now you see here it's a key point. Now you are missing your weight. You are missing x to the a, so put it and remove it. Put it here and divide by it also, remove it. And now look what you have here. You have this, and for a ball, for a parabola, this is all one, all the eigenvalues are 1, and this is xn divided by xn is 1 also. All these are 1s for this guy. So let me make now here a geometric arithmetic mean inequality, very simple one, and you get that this is less than that. Oh, I made a mistake, right? And you didn't correct me. I said that the operator was Laplacian plus A1. I said X1 to the A1 plus 1. No, because then you divide by X1 to the A1. So it's like the radial Laplacian. This is the radial Laplacian, and we are, okay, UX1 over X1. So this is the operator, which is now constant. So it's great. Everything works and everything are equalities in the radial case. And just to finish, let me tell you that in the more general case of homogeneous weights, it's a little more involved, but great that it works. It's much more general than monomial weights, but it works. You put and remove the weight. And now you have this, you wonder what you do with this. This is your operator, so you have to come back here. Ah, no, this is your operator here. You see the drift grad of log W. This I can only make like a geometric arithmetic mean. And that's always true. And I relate this by this. Just using this here at this point is where this condition comes up. And we just find it computing like this. This is with Joachim Serra, contributed very much. And then at the end it turns out, by as Villani pointed out, that this turns out to be a geometric natural condition on Ricci curvature. Okay. So thanks for your attention.